Geboren, Oberst Sir Harry Flashman, former aide, champion and all-round hero of the campaign, and the ill-starred attempt to snatch His Imperial Majesty from the firing squad. "The Emperor's English right arm, gentlemen," says Aggie, who was a great hand at the flashing-eyed flourish. So His Majesty called him. Who more fitting to guard his royal master and friend on his last journey home? Blessed, if they could think of anyone fitter. And I was received with polite enthusiasm. The reptiles left off sneering at my beastly peasant appearance and clicked their heels. Old Tegatoff stopped just short of embracing me, and I was aware of the awestruck admiration in the wide blue eyes of the enchanting blonde poppet whom he presented as his great niece, Gertrude von Unsum... something or other. My worldly Aggie noticed it too, and observed afterwards when we made our adieus at the ship's rail that if I looked like a scarecrow, I was at least a most romantic one.
"The poor little idiot will doubtless break her foolish heart over you en voyage," says she, "and afterwards wonder what she saw in the so dashing English rascal."
"Jealous of her, princess?" says I, and she burst out laughing.
"Of her youth, perhaps, not of her infatuation."
She gave that slantendicular smile that had been driving me wild for months.
"Well, not very much. But if I were 16 again like her, who knows? Adios, dear Harry."
And being royally careless of propriety, she kissed me full on the lips before the startled squareheads. And, for a delightful moment, it was the kiss of the lover she'd never been, which I still count a real conquest. Pity she was so crazy about her husband, I remember thinking, as she waved an elegant hand from her carriage and was gone. After that, they towed Max's coffin out to the ship in a barge and hoisted it inboard, and as the newly appointed escort to his cadaver, I was bound to give Tegatoff and his entourage a squint at the deceased, so that they could be sure they got the right chap. It was no end of a business, for his Mexican courtiers had done him proud with no fewer than 3 coffins, one of rosewood, a second of zinc, and the third of cedar, with Max inside the last one like one of those Russian dolls. He'd been embalmed, and I must say he looked in capital fettle, bar being a touch yellow and his hair starting to fall out. We screwed him in again, a chaplain said a prayer, and all that remained was to weigh anchor to thunderous salutes from various attendant warships, and for me to remind Tegatoff that a bath and a change of clobber would be in order. I've never had any great love for the cabbage chewers, having been given my bellyful by Bismarck and his gang in the Schleswig-Holstein affair, and Tegatoff's party included more than one of the crop-headed schlager-schwingers, whom I find especially detestable. But I'm bound to say that on that voyage, which lasted from late November 67 to the middle of January, they couldn't have been more amiable and hospitable. Until the very morning we dropped anchor off Trieste, when Tegatoff discovered that I'd been giving his great niece a few exercises they don't usually teach in young ladies' seminaries. Aggie had been right, you see. The silly chit had gone nutty on me at first sight. And who's to blame her? Stalwart, flashy, all bronzed and war-weary and sombrero and whiskers might well flutter a maiden heart, and if, at 45, I was old enough to be her father, that never stopped an adoring innocent yet, and you may be sure it don't stop me either. Puppy fat and golden sausage curls ain't my style as a rule, but combined with a creamy complexion, parted rosebud lips, and great forget-me-not eyes alight with idiotic worship, they have their attraction. For one thing, they awoke blissful memories of Elspeth on that balmy evening when I first rattled her in the bushes by the Clyde. The resemblance was more than physical, for both were brainless, although my darling half-wit is not without a certain native cunning. But what made dear little Fraulein Gertrude specially irresistible was her truly unfathomable ignorance of the more interesting facts of life, and her touching faith in me as a guide and mentor. Her attachment to me on the voyage was treated as something of a joke by Tegatoff's people, who seemed to regard her as a child still. More fool they, and since her duenne was usually too seasick to interfere, we were together a good deal. She was the most artless prattler, and was soon confiding her girlish secrets, dreams and fears. I learned that her doting great-uncle had brought her on the cruise as a betrothal present, and on her return to Vienna,